If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation. I want you to buckle up. We have a Q&A podcast. We haven't done one of these in a minute, but I was able to pull a bunch of questions from not only Instagram, but our private Discord channel, and hopefully work through some of the questions that you guys have that are following the Power Athlete training programs and also within the Power Athlete ecosystem. I've invited my good friend, training partner, and one of the guys that I see every day in the gym that was the thought process behind the Dragon Slayer, Mr. Arash Safwani, to come in and have a little interesting conversation. The first time I did a Q&A solo, I was facing a camera and I thought it was a little awkward. So as you know, I hate avoiding awkward situations. So I invited Arash to come in and interview me and bring his own level of personality, of which he has a ton. So I was excited to get Arash on the podcast. I know he'd be a great host or great guest and really just a good interviewer and somebody I could have a good conversation, as not only does he have a strength conditioning background, was a collegiate strength conditioning coach, black belt in judo, purple belt in jits, and not only trains athletes and works with some general pop, but grew up in Southern California. He's been a fan of Power Athlete for a number of years. So I'm excited for this Q&A. As always, if you want more information, you can always shoot an email to info@powerathletehq.com or ask the questions in our private Discord. And if you're not in the private Discord, join one of the Power Athlete programs and you can get into our private Discord. So buckle up for a Q&A with Mr. Arash Safwani. Really, the focus for this podcast, and for those of you guys sitting at home listening, we get a ton of questions, especially not only in the Discord, but also kicked over on info. So we aggregated a ton of questions. And instead of me sitting here just answering them to a question, I asked my good friend, training partner, and
humble student. You're one stripe white belt in the Power Athlete methodology.
But moving up well to come and kind of field these questions and have a good conversation. I always feel better that I do better in a one-on-one conversation than me just sitting there staring at a camera.
And I love you, John.
Oh, thank you. I love you too. All right. So what do you want to start with?
Okay. So let's just start off the top. Here's a question. When doing split squats, does it matter if the foot is flat, resting on the bench, or up on your toes like you are in a lunge? I put my toes into the pad on the bench to really lock in my position when doing split squats, but I'm not sure if that's right.
So, in a perfect world, you would have a pad, and then you would be able to rest your foot in dorsiflexion and really just rest on like the ankle top of the foot. The problem with that is when you use a bench, If you lay your foot flat, it's much more stable. Mm-hmm. When you put your toes in there, it's less stable. So I would try to figure out how I could kind of find something more like almost like a cylinder. Like we have these pads that are kind of adjusted. Mm-hmm. AbMat sells one you can slip on a barbell. That's really cool and that's super cheap to buy. So I would say don't use a big bench for the Bulgarian split squats, just for the fact that when you put your foot flat, that's not an advantageous position because you're in plantar flexion. Mm-hmm. And then it's flat. That's not the position we want. We want dorsiflexion, but I also don't want dorsiflexion with your toes driving in because that's unstable.
Right.
Now, between the two, if that's all you had, I would go with the dorsiflexion with the toes in, and I would work on just creating balance. But the true magic of the Bulgarian split squat, and by far the most hated movement in the Power Athlete catalog, is because we do it different than anybody else. Mm-hmm. There's two focuses. One, we need positive shin angle. So mm-hmm. we need the knee to drift over the toe, right? Which actually is that positive shin angle, which comes from sprinting. And then the other one is the knee behind the glute on the rear leg. Mm-hmm. That's really the magic maker. The knee behind the glute, it forces hip extension, which only happens when you sprint, right? And it only happens when, you know, the knee is behind the glute is when hip extension. And it's next to impossible to train anywhere else. Right. So all these people that do nothing but bilateral hip hinging, aka squatting, think about, oh, I'm getting hip extension. It's just standing up. It's mm-hmm. closing your hips. For hip extension to happen, the glute has, or the knee has to be behind the glute. So, and where do we see that position?
Shooting a double leg, shooting a single leg. I mean, at least in my purview, and then also sprinting, but, because we're not sprinting as often as when we were youth. Like you said, getting that knee behind the glute in this movement, unilateral movement where we're trying to emphasize the front leg, you know, it's going to be important to get that knee behind the glute in order to drive that those last 5 degrees of hip extension. So
we interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you pushing through performance roadblocks caused by pain or janky movement mechanics? Knock the rust off with our movement health courses used by thousands of athletes worldwide, from average Joes to MVPs. Our courses give you the tools to assess and fix yourself so you can get back to breaking necks and cashing checks. Not convinced? Get a taste of how our courses can help you by enrolling in a free sample today. Head to powerathletehq.com and search courses from the menu. Now back to the show. Before you came to train with me and a Power Athlete, had anybody ever cued it that way?
No, honestly, I had originally known that I want to keep a majority of my weight on the front foot, because I think that's also a common mistake, is to just kind of sit back into that supported leg.
Yeah.
And then what are you really doing here? Are you training the support leg, or are you training the leg that's out front?
Well, the reason people like to sit back on the support leg is because you can do a shit ton of weight.
Right.
And it's easier. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause you just basically sit and you just bounce off your quad and you use calf, and it's all like, it's just basically like doing a single leg pistol, mm-hmm. but it doesn't do anything to foster and develop athleticism. Like there's that monster sprinter who's a bike sprinter, mm-hmm. You know, that big
German guy.
Yeah. Which is like, you know, looks
he's
like
been a legend since the London Olympics.
Yeah. With just those massive quads. So if you watch him do Bulgarians, he puts 500 pounds on his back and he sits back onto his back leg and then uses his glute to bounce off of his calf.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, it's this. But for him, you know, like that movement translates, and because he can do that movement, it's not why he's an Olympic sprinter. He has those quads. He would probably have pretty close to those quads if he hadn't done it. It's an incredible show of strength. But in terms of fostering and developing athleticism, that is an incorrect movement within the paradigm of Power Athlete.
Well, I don't want to take too much away from him, but he's also going around a track and sitting in constant hip flexion. So he's almost never pushing off the back foot to sprint or pushing off the back foot to shoot a double leg.
And there's no eccentric load. It's all concentric, all push, 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 push. Yeah. So, but that single leg, and especially being able to be strong, to be able to grab, you know, pick a guy up, like we're talking about Victor in that sit-up guard, mm-hmm. as I'm watching him sit up, the knee is behind the glute and he's on one leg and he's driving through. And I think for Victor, learning that movement, especially the awkward variations that we did, mm-hmm. was like huge for him. So much so that when we were on Sunday, when we went to go lift weights, belt squat and a bunch of like, you know, those Bulgarians to try to open his hips up.
And he was an adept split squatter before he came, but it was also not in that variation. So he was like, man, I used to do 225 for my Bulgarian split squat. And I'm like, well, you know, as you said, you know, if you adjust the foot position now, all of a sudden we're actually getting into that hip extension. So moving on, for someone passionate about fitness and looking to venture into coaching, what power athlete course would you recommend?
So we have at academy.powerathletehq.com something called the Power Athlete Academy, right? Obviously telling you by the URL, but we have our methodology course, which is going to be the foundation principles of Power Athlete. That'll get through our different principles, like the SED principle, specificity, all the other pieces that you see within the training. So if you want the cheat codes and the back end hack into understanding how and why everything fits within these different programs, it's within the methodology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people like, for example, on the Discord, a guy was asking questions about hack twists. You know, you figure about fixed bilateral position. Now you're loading your torso, trying to hold good dead bug, squeeze the glutes. And now you're trying to separate the upper body from the lower body. That movement where an athlete's able to separate his body from the upper body or lower body from the upper body in that transverse plane,
the dissociation, yeah,
is the greatest show of athleticism. Think about an NFL receiver sprinting down the sideline. Right, legs going as fast as he can, full speed, and then he rotates back to catch that ball in stride, pull it back. Offense alignment sets back, feet are going nice and vertical, and he rotates his upper body to be able to shoot his hands.
Yeah,
same thing in jiu-jitsu. As I was watching these guys, there was every talented guy that could guard, pass, and move could disassociate, and more importantly, unconnect like a hip and a shoulder.
Right.
So they could, you know, get their hips going this way, upper body this way, and they could spin, and they were like not locked into these positions.
Whether the shoulder was fixed and the hips were moving, or the hips were fixed and the shoulders are moving. Yeah.
So that's just a loaded way of doing it. This guy had a ton of questions about it. And, you know, to the point where, you know, we'll do it bilateral, we'll do it staggered. You can do it with the hips locked, you can do it unlocked, or you can do it from your knees. You can do it from, you know, like one knee down, one knee up, kind of different position. So we've done it every different position. Mm-hmm. And so my comment to him was like, dude, if you're this excited, we got the methodology where now you can geek out, you can get super deep on this. And at least we can have like a more depth conversation. Cause the reason the methodology was created was, I had this option or not this option. I had the honor of training fucking thousands of athletes in CrossFit football. Mm-hmm. So we taught a seminar through CrossFit football called CrossFit Football Through CrossFit, where I traveled and I taught this power athlete methodology under the guise of CrossFit's banner called CrossFit Football. Mm-hmm. Started in 2009, taught 36 seminars that first year. We taught hundreds around the globe. And every time that I taught a seminar, there was like this pause moment when we started kind of just having some basic physiology conversations and basic, you know, elements of training and how we get into all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why I'm focused on movement, not movements, and why, you know, a bilateral hip hinge in an X axis, you know, that's the movement I'm focusing on. The implement in which you use it in loading is going to be based upon the skill of your athlete.
Yeah.
You know, Victor Hugo has issues with L4, L5, axial loading shuts him down. It doesn't make sense to put him in a position to get to shut him down.
Yeah.
So then what do? We found belt squat, forced him to keep nice and neutral, good dead bug position. And now he fucking squats heavier than I do on that.
Yeah. Thing. And we were talking about the hopelessness that guy felt against Philippe. Well, you don't have to feel hopeless if you can't squat, bench, deadlift, because I feel like people who train on their own, you know, don't necessarily know what the checklist is on building the athleticism. So like, well, I can't get a bar on my back. Well, I can't pick a bar off the ground.
I guess I'll die.
Yeah, I guess I'll die. You know, I guess I have to do Pilates and yoga for the rest of my days. But by having the knowledge of, hey, what are the actual aspects of athleticism that I need to work on? Well, now we can get into some other variations of these exercises, you know, the bilateral hip hinge, you know, the unilateral squatting, and then also what happens with hip dissociation to the shoulder.
Well, so. And what was nice about working with you guys is there was a whole bunch of darkness that I know you guys didn't want to go to that I had to write into the program, and nobody will voluntarily do that shit.
No.
you have to have somebody be like, we're doing this. Oh, fuck. Okay. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Because if you do it, like, there's no way to push yourself to do some of this stuff.
Well, there's obviously a method to the madness because the results speak for themselves.
Well, and what was cool too is to coach it in such a way and to kind of be able to kind of educate, you know, because one of the things, and this is something I really appreciated about Shanji, because he does the same thing. He's not only trying to get you to do the stuff, but he's educating you along the way. Hey, the reason we do this is this, and this mm-hmm. is where it translates. And so even when I'm working with you guys, hey, the reason we do this is because this, and now we see carryover, and you're trying to like constantly push for these aha moments.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question. What aspects of your training methodology interests you the most, and what's changed during your career? Great, great little tap on.
Wow. The thing that I've been focused on for many years and where I've seen the greatest carryover is the difference between absolute strength and dynamic strength.
Mm.
So I always viewed power as your ability to display strength dynamically.
Mm-hmm.
And one of like the splinters in my mind, one of like the, I guess you could say the matrix moments, if you want to put it like that, has always been where I've seen people move heavy weights, you know, with a ton of force and lift a bunch of heavy weight. But then I've never been impressed by people that could move like a big weight real slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you watch Shane Hammond all of a sudden squat 1,000 pounds and it looks like he's turned off a light switch and moves so fast.
Yeah. He drops down into the, oh my God, it's scary.
So that's why I've always liked, Olympic lifting, just like the dynamic nature of it, even though I don't believe Olympic lifting is the best form of athletic development.
Sure.
I think everybody that Olympic lifts at a high level is an incredible athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they display their athleticism under the bar with all the things, and they get real strong and they can do a lot of fucking amazing stuff. But I don't know if you take somebody who's unathletic and you teach them to Olympic lift, if that will make them a better athlete.
Right.
I think to some extent it will. But like, you're not going to make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times people really lean on Olympic lifting. Well, he just needs to learn to Olympic lift. But the time and effort that it takes for me to teach the classic lifts, there's a preparatory phase and there's an age to teach it. I can get a lot done with dynamic pulls, snatch pulls, clean pulls, and all the different variations. In terms of squatting and all the stuff that we do with, you know, plyometrics and jumping. I've always mm-hmm. used plyometrics as the bridge between the weight room and the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really seen the plyometrics, the bridge between the weight room and the jiu-jitsu mats. So the ability to be able to jump, generate force, control your body weight, and move through space. So I think that there's an interesting way to do it that doesn't require, because a lot of when I first, you know, so I powerlifted, this powerlifting deal in high school. When I got to Cal, my strength coach, Eric Hone, which is a fucking great, amazing dude, he came from this more kind of classical powerlifting, a little bit of Olympic lifting. He all of a sudden gets replaced by Todd Rice, which was snatch, clean and jerk, push press, front squat.
Yeah.
That was it. So to bench, I would have to go down to the RFC, which was the rec center. We would go down there and bench because we weren't allowed to bench.
Right.
You know, he was like, hey, I want to, you know, and he was trying to change the culture.
Yeah.
And it was plyometrics and jumps. I mean, I ended up front squatting 500 pounds, snatched 172, no, clean and jerked 172 and a half, snatched 130. And for me, that was a huge change in adaptation. And actually Olympic lifting fixed a lot of the problems that I'd had, because I think it was shitty movement that I was coming from.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it was the right point, but it also made me realize, like, is this the best way to foster and develop athleticism? For athletic people, I think it clears away the rubble.
Yeah.
But, you know, am I going to take like, you know, Victor and Philippe and you guys and be like, hey, we're going to do nothing but snatch, clean and jerk.
No. Well, not only because you probably have to correct more posture than anything to achieve a very efficient clean and jerk or a snatch, whereas, you know, their bodies have been morphed to a jiu-jitsu posture. So now you get to spend 5 to 6 months on the front end just to get them in the right position to do a clean and jerk.
If not even more.
Right.
And so can I get the same thing done with heavy sandbags,
mm-hmm.
A trap bar, kabuki bar, belt squat. I mean, all the implements that we have in the gym. Can I, if I'm looking for rate of force development and the ability to be able to generate force and pick up something heavy and throw it and get triple extension.
Mm-hmm.
So rate of force development, triple extension, and getting tall with heavy weights, I can do that with a sandbag. and it creates tensile strength because they have to do it with a round back.
Yeah.
You know, we still, you know, and this is where this X, Y, and Z axis and all these different pieces of this, you know, primal movements for the power athlete methodology come into play, because the principle of specificity is like, you know, and I did this for Victor, like, instead of telling me what he can't do, what can he do?
Mm-hmm.
And what can he do well? And then let's lean on that.
Yeah.
And so that's why when you guys come in and train, like, I know what's going to be done. Everybody's going to do some slight variation based upon where they are within the training, or more importantly, what they execute with the highest level of proficiency.
Mm. If you can't clean and jerk, you won't die. You know, so that's also another thing, yeah, is like, hey, if you know, you can't progress on the clean and jerk, or you just can't find a good overhead position, you know, the power athlete methodology will allow you to train around that and actually improve in spite of it. And I should say, my first formal strength and conditioning experiences were Olympic weightlifting with Sean Waxman. So love you, Sean.
Yeah.
And as an Iranian, I'm a huge fan of weightlifting, and it's in the culture.
Yeah, with Rezazadeh.
Yeah, exactly. And he was actually the reason I wanted to get into formal sports, was I watched Rezazadeh at the 2000 Olympics with my uncle, and I was like, wow, who is that? He kind of looks like one of us. And he's like, yeah, that's the strongest guy in the world. Hossein Rezazadeh. I was like, what is he doing? He's like, he's competing in the Olympic Games. I was like, I want to do that. And that's like that was kind of like my jumping off point. So, you don't need it. You don't need it to be the best athlete, but at the same time, if you can do it, great. But you know, there are other ways to foster athleticism besides.
Well, yeah. I mean, Mark Ripto made an interesting point, and he gets fucking lambasted on this all the time. He thought Olympic lifting was a shitty way to get strong. He thought it was an incredible way for strong athletic people to demonstrate that they're strong and athletic, mm-hmm, was snatch, clean, and jerk, and a level of proficiency and technical nature and just like a perfect movement.
Well, you're trying to put something over your head.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to getting the job done in football or in jiu-jitsu, where you got to put the guy on his back.
And his comment was, who would you rather not fight? With one of the guys in the world's strongest men or a Olympic weightlifter? And I was like, I don't know if I want to fight any of them, but I do not want to fight the mountain.
No, because he can grab chains and pull planes. And
yeah, well, and he just deadlifted 1,006 like it was nothing.
Yeah.
We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you pushing through performance roadblocks caused by pain or janky movement mechanics? Knock the rust off with our movement health courses used by thousands of athletes worldwide, from average Joes to MVPs. Our courses give you the tools to assess and fix yourself so you can get back to breaking necks and cashing checks. Not convinced? Get a taste of how our courses can help you by enrolling in a free sample today. Head to powerathletehq.com and search courses from the menu. Now back to the show.
Okay, so another question. My 11-year-old son wants to get faster. He wants to drop his 100-meter time. What suggestions do you have for starting him on a lifting conditioning program? I've started him on air squats, pull-ups, push-ups, etc., but wanted to ask about sprinting-specific movements other than just sprinting.
Man, that's interesting. So 11 is really at an interesting age. So there's difference between chronological age and physical age. Mm. I've met, you know, 10, 11-year-old kids that were really young. I've met other 10 and 11, 12-year-old kids that were physically more, you know, advanced. Like yesterday, my daughter came home from basketball, and she's like, Dad, I want to jump higher. You know, and then as we started, you know, lifting weights and doing some training and some things she could do, she's like, well, am I going to get bigger? I'm like, what do you mean? Well, because she grew early, and Jamie's like 5'7", 5'8", now, and she's 12. She feels like, she's like, I'm such a monster compared to these other girls, because none of these other girls have grown yet. I told her, I'm like, you just got your growth spurt early. They're all going to catch up. The boys are going to catch up. She's like, you know, all the boys are short compared to me. I'm like, don't, just believe me. Time will make everything equal. But what you can do is you can make sure that you take advantage of this, you know, kind of development phase, and start early learning to jump and learning to lift weights. And if we can set this at a young age, you're going to have a huge advantage, because you're going to have many more years of training ahead of you. Now, if she was physically undeveloped and very young in this, I would probably not push her into like kind of the training, which we're, what we're going to do. So if your 11-year-old son, I'd say, you know, if he wants to get faster, one, strength can be a limiting factor for speed up until the point it's not. So I've seen people start lifting weights, and this happened to me. I got faster when I got stronger. And then all of a sudden I got to a point where I didn't get faster from lifting weights. But what happened was I had to start to learn to use that and start using that strength dynamically. And that came from plyometrics. It came from compensatory acceleration. But all of that came as a later training modality.
Right.
Like even though Zhang has talked about compensatory acceleration when I was 14, I didn't necessarily understand what he meant until I got strong enough to know what it was to move a weight fast.
Yeah.
And then, with like the conditioning and the tensile strength and the time that it takes just to fold the metal, where all of a sudden now you're under a load and you understand what it is to brace and be strong and be able to hit all this stuff. So for your 11-year-old son, if he wanted to get faster, I would put him into something like Bedrock. Mm-hmm. Assuming he has a chronological age that's a little bit more, like usually we say somewhere around 13 or 14 is usually the ideal age for that Bedrock program. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to start him a little bit early, I would probably just start with the bar, teach the movements, step, squat, and lunge. I would definitely continue to do the pull-ups and the push-ups. The one movement that I remember the first time I saw somebody swing a kettlebell. I thought it was stupid. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this looks dumb, right? We Olympic lift, right? I do dynamic pulling. I snatch pull, I clean pull. Like these just look like some form of like a violent hip extension, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to get tall with vertical hip extension. It wasn't until I got into CrossFit where all of a sudden now they were using the kettlebell as a conditioning tool where, I just had never viewed it that way. I thought it was just kind of something you did for strength. But then we went to CrossFit and they started using it like 50, 100. We're going to do max this. And there was all these different conditioning tools. And somewhere in the middle of some god-awful kettlebell workout, I figured out what task-specific tension was. Mm. So you think about like, you're throwing a punch and it's kind of loose. And then all of a sudden it comes out. Then at the last minute, it gets nice and stiff and you knock the guy out. You're not like, mm-hmm. So you stay loose. Same thing in jiu-jitsu, right? You try to move. You get to a point where you have to brace. So you teach that task-specific tension.
The on and off switch.
Yeah. What I loved about the kettlebell, mm-hmm. somewhere in the middle of this really dark workout, it was actually called monkey claws. So it was 30 swings on the minute, and you had to get 30 swings with, a 72 we used at the time we first started. So it was 30 swings in 60 seconds. Then you get a minute off, and you do that 5 times. And then you have, so it's 150 swings in like 9 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you don't get around, then it was like, we had some penalty. You had to like set yourself on fire and jump off a building. But somewhere in this god-awful movement, in this god-awful workout called monkey claws, turn this thing off. Okay. Somewhere in the middle of monkey claws, I figured out this task-specific tension in the trunk because I was coming back and then pushing the weight and then kind of breathing and letting it float and then gathering. And it was this on off switch. And I had this like moment of epiphany where I was like, oh shit, dude, I can teach task specific tension with a kettlebell. Mm-hmm. And I can get into this violent hip extension. And I really viewed it more as a trunk stability movement.
Right.
And then also teaching people to sit into their hips and use their glutes. And then we were stuck at this 72 and nobody had any heavier than a 72 pound kettlebell. So we just kind of used it in conditioning. And then all of a sudden, one day, I think we had just moved to Texas. It was like 2016. Somewhere on the internet that a guy has 100 and 130 and 150 and a 203 pound kettlebell. Mm-hmm. And I was like, motherfucker, where have these been hiding? Have I been under a fucking rock? So I get online and I find it was Kettlebell Kings, who's here in Austin.
Right.
So I drive over and I'm like, what are the heaviest ones you have? And so I got that 106, I got the 150, and I got the 203, yeah. Loaded in my truck, and I came home. And I'd seen this interview with Andy Bolton. You remember him? Like right. My first guy's deadlift 1,000 pounds. He had a workout which was 10 swings with the 203 on the minute for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it was 100 swings, 10 minutes. So I get the 203, start working on the swing. So the first day, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go 4 minutes, and then I'll go 5 and go 6. And so every time I came in, I added a minute. Finally, after like failing numerous times, I finally got the 10 swings on the minute for 10 minutes. I laid in the gym for like legit 30 minutes, kind of like when after we did the Tabata the other day with Victor, how he was like spitting outside and like had this cough. Like I was all fucked up. Mm-hmm. And I put it up and I didn't touch it for like almost a year. And then finally I was like, time to bring you back out. Yeah. And I felt like we'd had enough distance apart that I could pull it down. And then we started using it a lot. So it's been, and then the other day, all of a sudden I saw, David Weck's guy, what is it? I forget his name, but he's one of David Weck's coaches posted a video. He has like a 330-pound kettlebell that he just bought. Oh, yeah,
the Geria, the Lake
Eroding Weakness. Is that it?
No, I was talking about the kettlebell. Oh, I think the kettlebell is made by Geria Sport Lakes or something like that.
Yeah, they have like a 168-kilo kettlebell, and these guys were swinging it. And at that point, I was like, man. What's the shipping on this? That's the only question I have. If that thing shows up, but I did upgrade. I don't know if you noticed it yesterday. I got the new bench. Did you see it?
No.
No, you haven't seen it?
No.
So we had, for those of you guys that remember, when we were in Costa Mesa, we had this kind of little bay, and we had all this custom equipment made by somebody that, Luke had hooked up with. He's like, dude, they're going to make us all this laser cut dope equipment. The chef shows up. It's the worst like Chinese garbage shit I've ever seen, to the point where I was like, dude, this is fucking janky as fuck. And so we had it and it looked good enough on camera, but it was like nobody wanted to lift on it.
Yeah.
So there was one adjustable bench that they gave us. And for some reason, I've rode it out with that adjustable bench out here at Power Athlete for way too long.
The one you make us do incline 100-pound dumbbell bench on it and it starts moving.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. So the other day we were doing slight incline with like 125s.
Yeah.
As I was bringing it down, I could feel it bouncing underneath me.
Yeah.
And I had this like moment of clarity. Like if this breaks with 250 pounds, like I'm going to either fucking blow a pack, something bad's going to happen or worse. Somebody that we're training or somebody that's training there who's not me is going to get hurt, and I'm going to be extremely fucking upset because I was cheap and didn't buy a new bench.
Yeah. So for your 11-year-old, make sure you're using solid equipment.
Yes.
But also to your point that you made earlier, the Bedrock training program, great jumping off point because, you want to keep the training simple. You want to go as general as possible to develop the athletic qualities and also teach the lifts, because he's going to have a lot of chance in high school and beyond to develop the more skill specific sprinting techniques. So right now, just keep him running, get him stronger. And like you said, start him off on Bedrock
and teach him to jump,
teach him how to jump. All right. So moving on, I'd like to ask how you manage your work, life, and family. Ooh. You are a busy man, as well as many of the people on here. I've heard you discuss the wallpaper on your phone as a daily reminder. How do you gauge if you're successfully balancing all those variables or even making progress on them all? I think about this often with the many hats I wear, just lots of self-reflection for myself, but always interested to hear from successful people like you on your own methods.
Wow. I'm going to show you what's on my phone. You guys will laugh at this. See if I can pull it up.
Is it like Philippe where it's a picture of himself?
Well, no, this one is actually me and my kids and my wife.
Nice.
But I have another one and I'll see if I can pull it. I can't pull it up right this second. No, it's not coming up. But pretty much if something's really important, what I do is I change my wallpaper to kind of be that. Mm-hmm. And one of the quotes that's on there regularly in the carousel is, at every moment, ask yourself, is this necessary? Mm. Which is a Stoic quote. And it's something that I think about constantly. Like, is this necessary? What is the most necessary thing? Mm-hmm. And, you made an incredible analogy, which, dude, I'm going to steal, which is, it's very hard to progress with everything balanced. To make movement, you're going to have like one side down. And like, if everything's in balance, you don't make movement. It's just even. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in this constant kind of battle of, what my family needs, what I need, what the business needs, and all the other things that I have going on here at the property. I've decided to be a steward of this land. DJ and I work on trucks and we're, building stuff and not only, building a blazer for Wade's Army. So I have that for our cancer charity, but, also, training myself, but then also working with you guys and wanting to develop my jiu-jitsu, which, I realize I'm not going to get to train 6 days a week as much as I would love to. I know.
The day I told you I trained 3 days that day,
I was so
the envy,
dude.
The envy was out of this world.
I've never been so happy and so jealous and so happy and so sad and so happy and so sick. I had every emotion wrapped up into one, where I was like, this motherfucker. And you know, it's one of those things where I tell you guys constantly, like, this is your time,
right?
Like, don't do anything. Like, enjoy the time to be selfish. Like, do the, you want to do jits 3 days in a row, or sorry, three times in one day. Like, do it. Like, it's not like you got, you know, wife and kids and all these other things to do it. Like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, take advantage of it. And, you know, I'm happy to know that you got a chance to do it 3 times in one day. I'm sad that I didn't get to do this.
Yeah.
But I get to live vicariously, just like as I'm at that fight, I'm watching Victor out there, and in my head, I'm like figuring out, I'm like, God damn it, would I love to be out there right now?
Yeah.
Like to be, you know, all the cameras, all eyes on me, and to walk out to, like, I'm even in my head, I was giving Victor walkout songs, because these are the songs I would walk out to.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing him stroll out in this, and I'm like, it's neat to see young guys coming into their own, having passion, and basically making good on what they want to do and being a part of it. And so, because for so long I got a chance to stand with my face in the sun, as you guys have heard me say, like, mm-hmm. I want you guys to have that same feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm stoked to be a part of it, but also a big part of me is still jealous.
And it requires Victor to kind of throw his weight forward, like we talk about the scale, right? Yeah. He's got to throw his weight forward in order for him to move forward.
Yeah.
So right now, that's going to be a much busier life for him.
Well, it's being selfish.
Right, being selfish.
And that's fine. And I told him, I'm like, hey, dude, this is the time to be selfish. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is, at a certain point, you don't, like, the minute that you get married and you start having kids, you can't be selfish anymore.
Right.
Selfish parents do not raise good kids. Like, you realize that they're selfish, it's their time. So just make the decision. Like, and I think when people...
Is this necessary?
Right? Yeah, is this necessary? So for me, you know, what we're doing in terms of, you know, growing Power Athlete and, you know, the podcast and the training, I mean, I try to do all these things. So what I try to do is I try to balance what I have to do, what I want to do, and what's required of me. So, you know, for me, the kids are, you know, fundamental. So, you know, like, I would go to jits on Wednesday nights, but now Cashy wants to go to jits on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And kids too. And so it's important that I'm there. So it's funny, as Cashy was finishing up, I see old man John roll in, and he's like, wait, you didn't bring your shit? And he's like talking shit to me. And I was like, I got him. And he's like, well, he can wait. And I'm like, he can't, because he's type one. I got to get him home and feed him. And he's like, you know, he's there with his daughter, and he's like, don't worry, it won't be like this forever. I'm like, I know. Yeah. Believe me, dude. I have, like, both schedules for HQ and also for Lake Travis lined up.
Right.
And so I'll be sitting there, and I got, like, my bag packed. I'll be like, oh, I can get there in 10, 20 minutes. All right, I'm going to go.
Keep your gi in the truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Just always ready to go.
I think that's important to note, that being mission directed, like, your mission is to positively impact as many people as possible.
Yeah.
So how do you balance work, life, family? Like you said, is it necessary? Well, necessary to what? To your mission, to what you're trying to accomplish as a person, to the goals that you're trying to set. And I think that's why smart goal setting is so important, because if, what is that one quote? A ship without a, without a heading, sails to no port or something.
Oh,
like that.
Yeah.
Was that one Stoic quote?
Yeah. It's, a ship without a favorable wind heads to no port, I think.
Yeah.
I'm gonna butcher that one.
If you have no direction to go to, and you didn't set any goals for yourself, well, balancing can seem kind of tedious, right? It's like, well, I'm doing the same stuff over and over again. But if you had a goal in mind or a mission in mind, well, doing those things are actually going to be fulfilling. So finding balance in that perspective is probably going to be more important to anything you achieve. Moving on, if you were training war fighters purely for their jobs and not having to factor in an element of the annual fitness tests and running, what would the training look like? Would it still be hammer? This is a fun one.
Yeah, this is a fun one because we actually have a practical application with this. Having worked with the guys at development group for a long time, I give those guys access to all of our programs. So it's always interesting to see what they kind of gravitate to. A lot of guys like Field Strong because they're doing so much mission specific stuff and they don't necessarily have a standardized PT test in the sense of like the Army does and that. So for the Special Operations Command, are you fit enough to do your job? They also do so much fight training that they need something that carries over in their fight training. So the guys like Field Strong, they like Dragon Slayer, and they like Jack Street because they all want to be jacked. But they also are doing so much they're doing so much in their training, like their specific training, that I don't know if I have to go out and necessarily beat the shit out of them. So I bet you if I looked at kind of a hierarchy, there'd be like a Field Strong, there'd be a Dragon Slayer and a Jack Street somewhere in there. Some of the guys do like Grindstone because it offers more flexibility. But for the most part, and then we got guys like on Johnny Wad that are still kind of like, hey, I just want one lift and I want to go smash it. But there are guys that follow Hammer too. I think for the guys that have to go long and they need a more organized run template, Hammer fits really perfect for that because we're in this constant balancing act. Like I need you to be in shape to run, but I need you to be able to be heavy. And so like we were talking about trying to develop a balanced program that's not too heavy on the run where you're getting weaker, but not enough running to where I still can't pass my PT test is a constant balancing act.
Right. Filling all the buckets of athleticism.
That's an interesting thing because Arash came with me to out to Damnik and worked with the guys at DevGru. What was your observation of those guys?
I was first of all blown away that I was even there. It was kind of like the Disneyland trip that that you couldn't take pictures at, right? So it's kind of like having that girlfriend that's at another school. You're like, no, I swear she exists, and it's like, well, I just have it for my memory. Hopefully, it lasts. But my impression of those guys was they were the, if you gave them an hour and they taught them about your job, they would be able to take over your job and then some. So they're like excellent problem solvers. I think that was the defining characteristic of them, because if you talk about athleticism, I've been to many college weight rooms and I've seen much more athletic people or display, what you would call like benchmarks for athleticism higher than, some of those guys, and some of them were really excellent. But one thing was damned determination. Like they were going to get the thing done, no matter what, and whether or not they were hurting or not. So,
And also a high level of coachability.
Oh, excellent.
So
learning to the max.
Yeah. I mean, so we, part of the event we taught had all power athlete stuff, but then also Sean G and the guys came to teach some jujitsu. And so what was fascinating was Shanji teaching basic concepts. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he taught them, nobody made mistakes.
Right.
Like their ability to take in information and replicate at such a high level. Like, there's a lot of times and that's the thing too, especially coaching, like taking them through the basic movements. Like I only have to coach something one time and they make the correction. Whereas other people, you have to like keep hitting them and you coach something 50 times.
Right.
Those guys like one, hey, do this. And they do it every time and there's no more correction.
I didn't hear one, what are you doing? Like I didn't hear one time, because as soon as Shanji showed something and, we all do this as coaches, but maybe we demonstrate something and we're looking at the people while we're demonstrating. So it may not necessarily be the exact perfect position. They would do it to the T. So then Shanji's like, hey, I'm sorry. I was looking at you guys while I was doing that. So this is the actual position I want you in, and they just clicked right away. It was impressive, even for the guys that were doing fight training, but not necessarily a lot of jujitsu. For them to adapt that quickly was remarkable, to say the least.
Yeah, that was cool.
And thanks for that experience, and I look forward to more of them. Moving on, has there ever been a deep dive, heavy critique of the toes forward squat? And if so, what was the biggest argument for and against it? And I'm going to have to stand up for my Bunyan gang. John has harped on the toes forward.
So the toes forward is always about transferability to sport and your ability to move through space. So I'm not interested in the maximal weight, even though there are people that squat better with a maximal weight with the toes forward position, right? Ideally,
or toes out rather.
Toes forward. I've seen people squat heavier toes forward, but I've also seen, you know, the Chuck Vogelpohls of the world squat with their feet at 30 degrees out and squat mm-hmm. monster weights. Mm-hmm. So when I went out to Westside Barbell, well, this happened many, many years ago, right? So when I started training with Rafael, we got, you know, into this idea of toes forward because it was a greater transfer for change of direction. So as you're kind of moving through space, your ability to plant and then to be able to generate force and, more importantly, get that knee over your instep so that it's the most efficient way to change direction. Mm-hmm. So because of that, that's a protective position opposed to the force bleed where the toe goes out. And where this really came to light was you end up becoming what you do the most. Like mm-hmm. you are a product of your habits. So if the most neurologically, physically demanding thing is a heavy barbell back squat, and there's some really fascinating research, and don't ask me about it because it's unpublished, but Tom Newman shared with me, they did a brain mapping. Mm-hmm. And they were able to look at, you know, different orders and, more importantly, different light brain mapping, like what lights up in the brain under certain percentages. And they found somewhere over that 90% activates that top part of the brain, and you need to do it for your decision-making, just your cognitive ability. So if the most neurologically demanding thing that you're doing with a heavy bar on your back, most maximal weight, opposed to maybe pulling, and we do that with a toes forward position too, very few people pull duck-footed. Mm-hmm. Now you'll watch some people do it, but it's very, very less the case because they also know that if you're going to do a vertical jump, you watch most guys in a vertical jump, feet are going to be underneath the hips, toes forward, big toe on the ground, they're going
to
jump.
Shout out to Dr. Squat.
Yeah.
Dr. Hatfield.
Yeah. So that position becomes ingrained because you're going to do it with the most maximal effort, right? And we also know that if you want to get your glutes involved in something, the big toe has to be in the ground. So when you turn the toes out to get the big toe on the ground, you're going to have to roll into your instep, which is going to be a less advantageous position. Mm-hmm. Now, there are people that do it, anatomical, you know, anthropomorphial ratios and all this other stuff, deep hip sockets. I mean, there's some fundamental pieces for that. But at the end of the day, if you want to be the strongest, most explosive athlete you can, the toes forward model in squatting is the one you use because we use it in everything.
Right.
You know, has there ever been a deep dive argument? The only argument that I'll ever hear about toes out is I can squat deeper into greater positions because I can open my toes up and I can get better, you know, driving out external rotation mm-hmm. to sit into the squat better so I can squat with more maximal weight. Okay. Well, I'm not necessarily training people to squat the heaviest weight. I don't get romanced. I'm not here training power lifters. Even though when I went out to Westside, when I was squatting, I set up and as I set up toes forward, Louis looked at me and he goes, "Oh shit, you can squat toes forward." Mm-hmm. And then I asked him, I'm like, "What do you know about it?" Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Oh yeah, the best athletes in the world should squat toes forward." And I was like, "But none of your guys squat toes forward." And he said, "It's because they're all too fat. their bellies are too big because we like to have them, you know, if you're 5 feet five, I want a 40 inch waist. The problem is they're so big around the belly, you know, the base of the pyramid's so big that they have to go toes out to get their knees out because mm-hmm. they're just too big in the belly." Yeah. And then I asked him about Vogelpohl because he was in shape and didn't have a big gut. And he's like, "Well, Chuck is Chuck." Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, cool. He's probably the best squatter in the history, you know, one of the best squatters in the history. And that's what he did. But he was also wearing
squat suit,
knee wraps and the whole nine yards.
So it goes back to task specific, right? So the task specificity for a powerlifter is, hey, I got to get my thighs parallel and get the good call from the referee.
Yep.
So whatever squat that looks like to achieve that is the toes out position more likely.
Yeah.
Whereas where I'm trying to freaking take a motherfucker down or pick him up, like I need my toes forward so I can be able to follow my opponent or, you know, change direction efficiently.
Yeah. And there's also a terrible misconception where because somebody is a power lifter and are pretty strong in the big three, they somehow understand and are strength coaches. Mm-hmm. Like that's a weird thing for me. Like, hey, I'm a power lifter. I got a shaved head and a goatee. Now all of a sudden I'm your strength coach, yeah. But yet that guy doesn't understand rate of force development. He doesn't understand being dynamic. He can't sprint. He can't run. If mm-hmm. he did, he'd probably die. Mm-hmm. So there's like a weird kind of carryover where, like, you know, just because this guy's pretty strong in these fixed movements, these closed chain movements where I got my feet planted and, you know, like I'm not looking for maximal. Like I never stepped on the field and somebody was like, oh, what do you bench? I bench 500. Okay, I'm going home today. Right? Like that just never fucking happened. But when I set and I was able to put my hands through a dude, it's funny, man. I saw the other day some guy who kind of maybe listens to the podcast. Maybe somebody he knows listened to the podcast and told him a story that wasn't exactly right. Uh-huh. But I wanted to bench 500 pounds just because I wanted to bench 500 pounds.
It's natural.
Yeah, it's a natural thing. You bench 400, you want to bench 500. And that was when I reached out to Louis Simmons and the guy made this whole thing about I needed to be, no, I was already fucking strong. I just wanted to bench 500. And because it was there, you know, it's just the same reason people look at mountains, right? Why are you going to climb that mountain? Because it's standing in front of me, 500 pounds.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, that was originally my first touch point with Louis Simmons. And, you know, what I was able to take in terms of compensatory acceleration is mechanical advantage increases, so does speed. So as I bring the bar up and I come in the lockout, being able to move that bar faster, whereas most people kind of slow the bar down. Mm-hmm. You know, they come in easing this thing in. I was trying to break these motherfuckers and, you know, be violent with the weights. And mm-hmm. that carryover into my hands and all of the, everything, I think, is really how I was able to play in the NFL and play at a high level for as long as I did. If people ask me, hey, what's the one thing you did? I tell them I'm like compensatory acceleration, trying to fucking break the weights.
Yeah, whipping the punch like Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we have another question. I'd like to ask about how to maintain motivation, discipline to train when tired from work, kids, life in general, when the sofa is looking incredibly comfortable for my fat ass. Also, another question is, how are people overcoming the tiredness of working, young kids, as there's only so much coffee I can drink before it affects my sleep? Finally, how do people fall asleep after training in the evening, as I'm generally wired for hours after training?
Wow. Okay. There's a lot to unpack.
That's kind of like, that kind of goes into like the work-life balance we talked about a little bit, right?
It has to. I mean, the...
But there's some specifics about, you know, it looks like caffeination.
I do not subscribe to motivation. So I look at everything as discipline, right? Like there's a discipline that you have like within your routine, right? Like, like Shanji talked about, when I asked him, I'm like, do you do jujitsu every day? He's like, of course. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I do jujitsu? It's what I do.
Yeah.
And so, he's not showing up because he's motivated to do jujitsu. He's showing up because this is what he does and this is who he is. Mm-hmm. And this is just his, like, discipline of who he is and mastering his craft. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Matt and I train at 6 a.m. You know, we go 2 days on, 1 day off. You know, I know I have to do all my zone 2 work. So I got up at 6, we'll do this podcast. I'll probably jump back and do my zone 2 stuff. And then I got to go out and work with Milton. And so we kind of run into this like, hey, like what do I have to do over the course of the day? And am I motivated to do it? I mean, no, you know, like, it's not like I'm like, you know, ripping and fighting and, you know,
you're not Superman every day.
No.
Right.
But you know that the work has to be done. And that's where that analogy, the move the dirt came from, you know, which we have a shovel and a spoon over there on the wall, is it's about setting habits. And this is who I am. And this is my identity. And these are the pieces of my identity that I have to do each day. Mm-hmm. And it's not like all of a sudden I change where I'm like, okay, hey, I'm a jiu-jitsu guy now. And all I do is roll 7 days a week and I don't lift weights. I'm like, no, I still have to train. And this is where I'm kind of fitting these pieces in. And I'm able to, some days I get to go 3 or 4 days a week. Other days I go one. And I have a non-negotiable. It has to at least be 1 day a week.
Right.
It can be as many days as I want, but there always has to be. And I haven't missed a week since I've started.
You got to touch it. You got to touch it once and move on, you know?
And what's amazing, if I get to go like 3 or 4 days that week, it's pretty amazing. By that third or fourth day, all of a sudden you like, everything just feels like you grease the groove.
Yeah.
And so I know when Shanji's like, the reason we roll every day is that you need to be able to have that feeling, just like lifting weights.
Yeah.
Like if you don't pick up heavy weights and do different things, all of a sudden, like the weights forget your name. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, what happened to you, old friend? What, you forgot me this soon?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get in there and you're like, oh, like the, it happens. I mean, all the time. Like you get underneath the bar and you'll be like, fuck, this is heavy.
This is heavy today.
And then you're like, fuck, dude, I used to be way stronger than this. How have you forgotten me, old friend?
Yeah.
And then you remember that, what grows is what you water, you know, like if you want like your garden to grow, like, you know, I always hated the grass is greener on the other side. No, the grass is always greener where you water it and where you tend it. Mm-hmm. If you tend your grass, it'll be always greener than what's not being tended. So that's where my, you know, like it's discipline. It's not motivation.
Right.
It's just who we are. And this is my identity. And the minute that your identity encases these things, then you have to continue to do them so that this maintains your identity.
Yeah. Because you won't always be motivated, but you do have to be disciplined. And then I guess like there's another aspect of this question of how do people fall asleep after training in the evening? Because I'm sure there's many people guilty of slamming a C4 or hitting like Americano right before their session at 5 p.m., 6 p.m. And then how do you sleep?
I don't do that. But also caffeine caffeine has a different effect on me. Mm-hmm. Like I can drink a pot of coffee and go right to sleep. Mm. So I drink coffee for the taste. I know it's crazy.
But a dodgeball quote.
Yeah.
I drink my own urine because it's sterile and I like the taste.
It's a good one. The coffee thing is interesting. I think people lean really heavy on these kind of external motivations. I kind of always reserved kind of that stuff for when I really needed it. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't a big like pre-workout, even though Dr. Tom used to make this pre-workout that was called Neuropath, which I'm been fucking beating his ear in mm-hmm. about making again.
Sure as the ear.
Dude, when you take it, I could see sounds. Like that's how fucking lit up
you
I was.
You got synthesia, dude, whatever it's called.
All of a sudden, like somebody's talking and it was like those cartoons where you see the sounds coming out and I'm like, fuck, I can see sounds. I was so like, I remember the first time he said, God, take a full scoop. It is by far the most powerful thing. Like people talk about Jack 3D and all this other shit.
Oh, dude. I remember the original formulation. I would take Jack 3D and I was a freshman in college.
And then you just have heart palpitations?
Down to the rec center and just exactly. I was like, this thing in my chest, is it a chest pump or do I have 20 seconds?
Dude, Dr. Com's shit was legit. So I've been trying to get him to remake it. But I would really just strive away from that stuff. Mm. I think if you have to have like a cup of external motivation, we either need to fix the sleep or we need to look at the diet. We need to look at the training and the recovery. Maybe you're training too much. If you're having to go to that well all the time, we got other issues.
Right. It should be sharpening your sword, but not the reason why your sword is sharp.
Yeah.
Right. So
I can't imagine taking a bunch of pre-workout before jiu-jitsu.
Oh man, I'll tell you all about it.
That seems like a terrible idea.
It's like, you know, because not everybody has been training against the best guys in the world, but anybody who's better than you, if you are wired and you're just like on pre-workout, you will do extraneous movement and use a little bit too much energy. And by minute three of a 6-minute round, you're done for. Right? And it's just because you're overstimulated.
Yeah.
The closest I can get to it is I used to wake up early and go to yoga and but then I would drink my coffee. And then when I go to yoga, I couldn't be patient in any position. And I was like, man, why can't I hold this position for this long? It's literally just because my body wants to move out of here. So for anything that requires a little bit of patience, thinking, you know, I don't recommend a ton of caffeine. It's great for maybe PR day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, if it's 6 a.m., you know, go for it. But I fall into this same category because a lot of times I'll train at the 6, 7 or the 7 and 8 o'clock PM class. Mm-hmm. And then I got to get in the car, drive the 30 minutes home. And then by the time I get home, I have to eat something. And then I like to be in bed before like right around 9:30 and be asleep.
Life as a farmer.
Yeah. So my deal, my non-negotiable is I like to be in bed by like 9:30 and asleep by 10, because if I wake up at 5, that's like my 7 hours. And I'm right at this like 7 hours or 5:30 if I can get like 7.5. But if I can get more than 7, between 7 and 8, I'm golden. Yeah. If all of a sudden I start falling below that 7, the HRV, the amount of breaths I take in a minute, my heartbeat, everything seems to be like this. Like I can keep like right around 15 breaths. I can keep my heart rate like sub 50, like 47, 48, and then my HRV in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah.
If I start falling into that 5 or 6, dude, it just, everything goes to shit. So, and I'm not willing to feel like shit anymore during the day. Mm-hmm. Whereas before I'd just be like, ah, fuck it. It's just part of life. So what I do when I come home, I don't eat a ton because I don't sleep well on a full stomach. I'll definitely have to take a shower because you have to take a shower after jiu-jitsu because you're sweaty and it's disgusting if you don't. But I have like a little like nighttime ritual, right? Where like I take my duck parsley sleep remedy. Mm-hmm. I make sure I have a whole bunch of magnesium and some element salt, and I kind of make this kind of deal. I sit down, and then what I'll do is I've been seeing this dude for my neck, and he gives me this like wedge pillow. So I kind of like lay and I'll just kind of like meditate with like my neck in this position. Mm-hmm. Make sure I take the sleep to stuff and I kind of just relax a little bit and don't watch any TV, no bright lights. Mm-hmm. And I try to like down regulate as fast as possible. I lay down and then I'm a fast sleeper. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I lay down, I can be asleep in, you know, 2 minutes. So, but sometimes when I'm pretty lit up, especially if I haven't done well, or if I got fucking smashed, then I will like tend to like replay in my mind.
Yeah.
And when that happens, I can't do it. I just have to like compartmentalize it on the drive and just fucking let it go.
And as somebody, just going back to the whole coffee energy thing, how important do you think hydration is?
Oh, dude.
Because like there's many times where I feel like I'm dragging ass and I'm like, all right, I ate enough. All right, I'm doing all the right things, but what's my missing piece?
The salt. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, Rob Wolf and Element has added something to my life I didn't know I needed, mm-hmm. but now I won't go without. So I've always salted the hell out of my meat and I've always been real big, but like actually supplementing. So the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is I get like a big, like 16-ounce glass of water. I put a packet of Element in with a creatine and glutamine. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of magnesium, and I kind of stir that up, and then I kind of drink that slowly, and then I go train, and then that's like my pre-workout. Mm-hmm. But I try to have that about 5:30, and then I go out and I, you know, we'll be at the gym by 6. I've been messing with Chris Duffin's VasoBlitz, which which is good. It's really good stuff. I don't necessarily feel like a pre-workout, but I feel like a better pump from it. He's got a bunch of cool stuff in there. I mean, that thing is like, that's legit. And then when I come down and, I usually I'll eat breakfast and that's when I drink my coffee.
Mm-hmm. And so after the training, drink the coffee. That's also something Stan Efferding has been, preaching a little bit about, you know, people taking caffeine the wrong way. It's like caffeine is actually a really good shuttle for nutrients. So it's like post-workout should be when you slam your coffee, slam your protein shake and everything rushes in.
Well, the other thing too, is I like coffee. So I never want to feel like I'm rushing coffee.
Right.
So like I always want to sit down and enjoy it instead of just like these guys. Like, so Matt smashes coffee like the whole time in the workout.
Guilty.
And he just is fucking killing it. And then he's like, no coffee. I'm like, no, post-workout coffee. That's my coffee.
Yeah.
So I'll drink coffee through the day. I usually have one and I'll have one at lunch. And then maybe in the afternoon I might have one, but I don't have any issues. I think if coffee's affecting your sleep, dude, I've known people that if they have coffee past 8 a.m., though, they can't sleep. So it really affects other, you know, everybody metabolizes coffee. I'm a fast metabolizer for it.
So look at salt, look at hydration as a way to increase energy.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if this is the last question, but, I got another one for you. I know I am capable of physically defending my family if the need arises, but how should I be sharpening those skills? With each passing day, you are either sharpening the blade or letting it get dull and rust. How do I arrange my training to accomplish the task of staying strong, staying fit, and staying lethal? Good one.
That's a good one to end on. Well, you know what? I think there is legions and legions of men in this country and around the world that have this misconception that if something were to happen, they would be prepared, right? Like I've heard that, like, well, I see red.
Oh yeah. That's the jiu-jitsu meme.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, that would never work on me. If I just see red, I'll be able to bust out of this technique.
Yeah. And, that's a really interesting piece because, what that means is that you've basically risen to a level of emotion where you're irrational. Mm-hmm. You know, where all of a sudden rage takes over and you think that like the rage monkey inside you is going to somehow fuel you to it. And as you've seen in every fight, everything you've ever done, the person that loses their cool the fastest is the person that loses the quickest. Mm-hmm. So in any form of whether it be boxing or football or combat, there's like a controlled rage, but a level of like consciousness and like decision making and the ability to see things happen, you know, like the age old when you work in security and you've seen this.
Yeah.
You see drunk people. And you're like, I'm sober and you're drunk. How in the world are you thinking that I'm going to get hit with this slow punch?
Yeah.
Or you think that somehow this is going to happen to you. This is a bad day for you.
Yeah.
And I've watched hundreds of drunks get their asses beat by security guys because those dudes are sober. Two, they train and they're looking for this. And this is what they do every night. You show up to a bar once a week, have a bunch of drinks and think you're going to beat up some dude with cauliflower ears.
Yeah.
And to some extent, I was not living in a fantasy, but a little bit. And then when Craig hit me up about going to his event, I was like, this confirmed exactly what I knew. One-on-one on my feet, I'm going to crush him, right? Because that's what I focus on and that's what I did this. You put me on the ground and a bunch of people on top of me, I didn't have a defense for that.
You fall to your lowest.
Yeah.
What is it? The lowest level of
your
training?
Yeah, no. Nobody ever rises to the occasion. You just fall to the level of your training, which is, you know, we get from the SEAL teams and also in pro football. Mm-hmm. And nobody, and this is one that I've coined too, nobody on game day miraculously becomes somebody that they're not in training and in practice. Mm. So I used to watch guys like, you know, hey, they'd be in practice and they'd be shit. And then all of a sudden they thought on game day they were going to go turn it on. And I'm like, no, it doesn't happen. What happens is you play at a high level and then all of a sudden you get into the game and you just notch it up a little bit to match everybody's intensity, but you're still the same person. Mm-hmm. If you're losing a one-on-one pass pro in practice, you're going to make those same mistakes. You're not all of a sudden going to be like, shoo, 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 shoo. Doesn't fucking happen.
Right.
It's like not like you're going to go into a, you know, hey, I'm going to go fight in, pans, no gi, and all of a sudden I'm getting killed in training, but I'm going to show up and submit everybody.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, I never really got that. But I also have seen guys in jiu-jitsu, especially people that are new, get into what I call the rage monkey, where all of a sudden they like they start making all these noises and they're getting all mad and I just give them the shanji kama, which is Portuguese for calm down, which is Shanji's favorite term for me.
Yeah,
because he's the energy button. It's like video game. You're hitting the energy button.
You need the equal amounts of fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
Jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, he's like, Jean, you have to balance the jiu-jitsu with the fuck you.
Well, no, right? It's like you're generating, you're training the aptitude in whatever it is. And I think the guy's talking about if the need arises, how do I sharpen those skills? Well,
you have to sharpen the skills.
You have to sharpen the skills. So I think some of the buckets that we can talk about are physical fitness, right? So when you are on a heightened state or emergency, your heart rate's already gone. So if you're out of shape and your heart rate's going, well, that means that you're already capping yourself at like 40-50% of what you're capable of doing. So if you're in really good shape, you're probably not going to display your best when you're in a state of emergency. So keeping your fitness levels high is going to be advantageous. And then, you know, obviously grappling training, having contingency plans, that's probably par for the course in terms of being able to defend yourself when the occasion arises. But then also, I don't know about the thing that I've been diving into is weapons training.
Okay.
I like to consider myself a white belt at firearms. So when I showed up to Craig Douglas's course, I was asking him, hey man, where am I looking when I aim the gun? Should I look at the three dots? Should I make the three dots align with each other? He goes, hey brother, you got to work on that. Like, you're not going to learn that in the weekend here, but like, that's something that you need to, research and work on, because like here I'm trying to teach you how to defend yourself in 0 to 5 yards. But then when we got to the grappling portion, even with the sim guns and the threat of being shot by, a guy who's a professional shooter, I was able to navigate the grappling portion, because even with the Tony Blauer head on, and then or the helmet on,
the spear helmets,
and the emergency situation, I was able to keep my cool and do my grappling. Even though I would definitely say it wasn't my best grappling, it was still an occasion where my aptitude determined the outcome.
I was thinking about like, okay, you do jits 3 times a day, 5 days a week. You're training 14, 15, 16, 18 times a week.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, after a few weeks, you go in there and you're in a situation, let's say you were at the mothership, and all of a sudden some dude like grabs you in a weird way and you're just kind of like, oh, like I'm like the familiarity. And I think that's what happens in football. You practice so much and you're used to like every little thing that all of a sudden it just becomes so automatic because you see it. It's like the greasing of the groove. It just becomes automatic. And I think that's the one frustrating thing about only going maybe 1 or 2 days a week is that just when I start to feel good and then I get to go once, and it's just enough to keep the water kind of simmering. But that analogy we were talking about where jiu-jitsu is a lot like warm water, right? You want to keep the water warm all the time. So if you have to turn the heat up, it boils quick. Opposed from cold water that you have to boil takes much longer.
So how would you arrange training? Would you say like between, you know, physical fitness, martial arts training, and then, you know, emergency plan training, I guess?
I think you have to, at least for me, if I'm going to carry a pistol, I need to be proficient with it, right? I'm not going to just all of a sudden, you're not going to strap on a pistol and be John Wick.
Right.
So I think either you have to do some form of dry firing at least every day, every other day, a couple of days a week, and be able to go to the range at least once a month, if not more. The big thing too is transitions. So with the pistol to the rifle, being able to transition and be able to pull and do all that stuff, like that's a perishable skill. We have some weighted vests that we do wear up in the gym. So I like in terms of body armor and
plate carriers and stuff.
Yeah, that's important. But I also think too, man, like being able, like how many days are available to you? Because everybody is only going to have so much time available to them. So you have to divide that up. I think you need at least 3 to 4 days a week of lifting weights. I go 2 on, 1 off, and I just kind of just goes through that way. In 7 days, you get X amount of days. For jits, I try to at least do it once, if not 3 to 4. And I need to be better on that. And then for me, I have to do at least, I got to get 3 zone 2 workouts a day. So I kind of look at like, this is the bank of things that I need to do. And then it's up to me to kind of navigate through these.
Gotcha.
So for me, I need to, you know, develop a big aerobic base. I need to lift weights, max motor unit recruitment. I need to stay strong. And I need to create that athletic problem solving, which for me is jiu-jitsu. It might be other things for other people. But I think if you're going to carry a gun and might be in a situation where you might think that maybe gun proficiency is helpful, you need to be training with it. I just don't. And I get nervous where people, you know, like, I haven't been to the range in years. And you're like, well, fuck, dude, you carry a gun all the time.
Yeah. Even De Niro and Taxi Driver looked in the mirror with his gun. So, you know, he even came up with a phrase that he would say to the guy. You know, it was like,
yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully you're never in a position where you have to use it.
Right.
But like, hope is never a good plan. I think we got that from the SEAL teams too. If hope is your plan, we got bigger fucking. I mean, this is, yeah, like hope's not good. No. So, you got any questions?
No, but I'm sure. The questions that I have for you are probably not fit for Power Athlete Radio.
Well, we'll end it there.
Yes.
Thanks, Arash.
Thank you, John.
I appreciate it, brother.
Love you so much. Yep. Power Athlete Radio, out.
See ya. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.